Good evening. In the news tonight, the next step in the GOP's fight against Obamacare. Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams calls for an independent commission to look into who's responsible for the wrongful convictions crisis.
We want to see if there was a pattern in practice that indicate there was an intentional actions on the part of anyone to illegally convict innocent people.
A look at a complaint filed by watchdog groups against Don Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort, and Rob Goldstone.
I can't help what someone sends me. You know, I read it. I responded accordingly.
Refuse fascism mobilizes in its fight against the Trump-Pence administration.
This regime is only going to continue to oppress people, and all that it takes is inaction for this regime to become full-out fascist.
And residents along the Hudson aren't satisfied with General Electric's cleanup of PCBs they dumped in the river. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Wednesday, July 19th, 2017. The Senate Republican health care bill failed, but today Donald Trump met with Senate Republicans to lobby for a straight-up repeal vote. Asked whether the Republican plan is dead, he said, "I don't think it's dead, no, but it's disappointing." Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the Senate will move ahead with a repeal vote.
In the coming days, the Senate will take up and vote on a repeal of Obamacare combined with a stable 2-year transition period as we work toward patient-centered health care.
According to the Independent Congressional Budget Office, the repeal and delay plan would cause even more havoc than the Senate Republican health care bill. It would cause widespread disruption to the nation's health care system and lead to 32 million more uninsured Americans over the next decade, 10 million more than under the Senate repeal and replace plan, which would increase the number of uninsured by 22 million by 2026. And budget analysts say the repeal without replacement plan would cause insurance premiums to jump by 20 to 25% next year. That's for Americans who rely on insurance marketplaces. And premiums would double by 2026, according to the Congressional Budget Office. In other news, there's Trump's travel ban. The Supreme Court is leaving in place a lower court order which expanded family relations that can be used by travelers from 6 mostly Muslim countries to get into the U.S. It affirmed that bona fide relations include grandparents, grandchildren, brothers and sister-in-laws, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins. This list goes with a list already including a parent, spouse, fiancé, son, daughter, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, or sibling already in the U.S. Justices, however, blocked a lower court order to require refugees who would work with a resettlement agency into the U.S. This means 24,000 refugees who have already been assigned to a charity or religious organization in the U.S. won't be able to use that connection to get into this country. Justices Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Clarence Thomas would have blocked the order in its entirety. These same justices last month said they would have allowed the Trump travel ban to take full effect. This week in New York City, Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams called on Governor Andrew Cuomo to set up a blue ribbon commission to determine who was involved in wrongful convictions of many people in Brooklyn and throughout the states.
We are hoping that the governor will allow this commission to examine wrongful convictions throughout the entire state. As the Brooklyn Borough President, my focus here in Brooklyn, of 23 convictions since 2014 were overturned. We want to see if there was a pattern in practice that indicate there was an intentional actions on the part of anyone to illegally convict innocent people, and all those who are involved should be held accountable. The question is this human error or this human intention? And if it's human intention, that crosses the line and the people held responsible should be held culpable for what happened. If the prosecutors in any way turned their backs on or turned their heads when something was improperly done, then they need to be held accountable for that. And the only way we can get to the heart of the problem is to allow this Blue Ribbon Commission to do an investigation with subpoena power so they can get all the documents they need, not only the documents in public view, but the documents that are in the case files, and determine what exactly happened here.
One of those wrongly convicted is Jabbar Washington. The 43-year-old Brooklyn man was released from prison on July 12th. This after he spent 20 years in prison for a 1995 robbery and shooting in Brownsville. Key evidence which would have helped his case was blocked by prosecutors, like that the witness who identified him in a lineup later retracted her statement.
The courts looked at the evidence and how he was convicted, and the courts made the determination to reverse his conviction and allow him to be a free man. So this was the decision of the courts. That's the same mechanism we want to use to say that this is not the end of the chapter. This is the beginning of a new chapter of finding out all those who are involved.
Washington's case is one of 70 cases the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office has investigated for potential wrongful conviction and exoneration. So far, their conviction review unit has led to the release of 23 wrongfully convicted individuals for crimes which they didn't commit. Adams says there's a troubling pattern.
Many of these men who have been wrongfully convicted were Black or Hispanic men, and that same pattern seemed to be pervasive throughout the entire country. We believe that ethnicity is playing a role on this injustice, and we would like to see that reversed.
There's a troubling and frightening story about how justice was meted out during the 1980s and 1990s in New York City, specifically in Brooklyn. And that story needs to be documented and told. Because we have to tell the story of how people were wrongfully convicted and that their rights were violated. And two, we have to make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone in the future.
Civil rights attorney Norman Siegel.
And what basically was happening is, one, that police officers, people in the district attorney's offices were manufacturing, falsifying evidence. Manifestation was that coerced confessions to young men of color, disproportionately Black. And second, that the police and the district attorney's offices would fail to disclose exculpatory evidence, that if the evidence was given to the defense lawyer, perhaps there would have been a not guilty verdict rather than guilty. And then finally, we have to talk about the racial aspects of this. You're talking about too many young men of color, disproportionately Black, who were convicted at young ages, spending years in jail, and then civil rights lawyers are able to persuade the court that there were wrongful convictions. They're let out, they get a few million dollars, but that's not adequate. We need to look at the systemic problems, find out, was it just Brooklyn? Was it all New York City? Was it all New York State? And then, is this happening in other places around the country? The criminal justice system is supposed to be about justice. It's not about winning a case and convicting someone, especially when the evidence is not there.
For the venerable civil liberties attorney and former head of the New York Civil Liberties Union, wrongful convictions aren't surprising.
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn. I went south in the mid-60s and had the honor to participate in the Southern Civil Rights Movement. And one thing when I reflect back is Southerners were very brutally honest about their racism. Up south in places like New York City, although our mayor proclaims to be a progressive, I think he's a phony progressive, the racism, the classism is more subtle and more sophisticated. But it still does exist here. And so I think eventually when this story is documented and told, I think what will come out is that people in the criminal justice system, the police, the prosecutors, stereotype young men of color, specifically young Black individuals, and a crime was committed. Very often a person died. There was enormous pressure put on people to find the killer. And so Again, they manufactured falsified evidence in certain instances, and young men of color were wrongfully convicted.
Siegel says he's not shocked that this is occurring here in New York, in one of the most progressive cities in the country. Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams wants the Blue Ribbon Commission to be set up with experts who are adept in reviewing cases, prior prosecutors, judges, prior law enforcement, and with advocates dealing with wrongful convictions, as well as those who have served time. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. It's been more than a week since the story about a meeting Donald Trump Jr. had to get damaging information on Hillary Clinton during the 2016 election campaign surfaced. The story has changed again and again, but what hasn't changed is the law, and that Don Jr. meeting with a foreign national to obtain information is a violation of the federal election law. Here's Donald Trump's 39-year-old son, Don Jr., on Hannity, July 11th.
Someone sent me an email. I can't help what someone sends me. You know, I read it, I responded accordingly, and if there was something interesting there, I think it's pretty common.
A series of recently disclosed emails show that Don Jr.'s meeting with foreign nationals was arranged through Ron Goldstone, a music producer. The New York Times reported that Goldstone's offer of information about Hillary Clinton was part of Russia and its government support for Trump. Don Jr. emailed Goldstone back, "If it's what you say, I love it," especially later in the summer. He wasn't surprised or disturbed by the material or where it was coming from. In recent days, the number of people at the meeting with Don Jr. has risen. Late-night comedians joke that the number keeps rising. Adav Noti is senior director at the Campaign Legal Center and former associate counsel of the FEC, the Federal Election Commission. We're speaking with him because he knows quite a bit about a law Trump Jr. violated, the Federal Campaign Act.
It's the main federal law that governs how money is allowed to be raised and spent for federal elections.
So what does that mean in the context of Don Jr.?
So one of the provisions in federal law is a prohibition on receiving money from foreign nationals and also asking foreign nationals to give anything of value to a candidate or a political party or anybody involved in campaigning.
But we're not really talking about money. Don Jr. was told he could get dirt on Hillary Clinton, so it's not really money that he was going to get. It was information.
Right, and the law covers both. So the way the provision is worded, it covers a gift of money or a donation or anything of value to a candidate or political party or similar entity.
Can you tell us about the complaint that you filed? Who did you file it with, and what do you think is going to come out of it?
Sure. So we filed a complaint with the Federal Election Commission alleging that Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort, and Rob Goldstone, who's the person who arranged the meeting, all violated the ban on soliciting a foreign national in connection with an election.
Okay. What's in the complaint?
So the complaint, which is based primarily on press reports and publicly available materials, points out that there is documentary evidence, specifically an email chain, that those individuals were informed that a foreign national acting on behalf of, or at least conveying information from, a foreign government wished to give them something of value in connection with their campaign to help them and to harm their opponent.
And then even Don Jr. on Hannity.
Yes, and we noted in our complaint what he said on Hannity in terms of what he expected to get out of the meeting, yeah.
Honestly, my takeaway when all of this was going on is that someone has information on our opponent. You know, things are going a million miles an hour. You know what it's like to be on a campaign. We just won Indiana, but we're talking about a contested convention. Things are going a million miles an hour again. And, hey, wait a minute. I've heard about all these things, but maybe this is something. I should hear them out.
Okay. When you read the parts about the Russian government or Russia supporting your father, did that put off any sirens in your head?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think this was, again, just basic information that was going to be possibly there. I didn't know these guys well enough to understand that if this talent manager from Miss Universe, you know, had this kind of thing. So I wanted to hear him out and play it out and see what happens. But, you know, people are trying to reach out to you all the time with this.
So we filed a formal complaint with the FEC.
Adav Noti.
We also then sent a letter, or at the same time sent a letter to the Department of Justice attaching that complaint. And the way the prosecutorial authority works, the Federal Election Commission can enforce essentially by seeking fines against people who violate the law for criminal acts, things that could result in imprisonment. The Department of Justice has jurisdiction over those. So we notified both entities.
And so you had to really go around Jeff Sessions. He was not the person to contact, correct?
Right. And so we sent our notification to, I believe it's the Deputy Attorney General and to the special counsel, given that...
Rod Rosenstein,
yes.
And Robert Mueller.
Correct, because the Attorney General is recused from Russia-related matters, according to public reports.
And so what are you expecting to come out of this? You just filed this at the end of last week. So what are you expecting from this?
So as it relates to the FEC, the next step in the process is for the FEC to examine the materials we've submitted and to determine whether they provide reason to believe that the law has been violated. And if the FEC's commissioners find reason to believe that the law has been violated, then the next step is an investigation by the FEC, and the FEC has subpoena power and all the things necessary to conduct a full investigation. So hopefully they will make that finding that there's reason to believe the law has been violated and then conduct an investigation.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think that people should know or take away from this whole exchange that Don Trump Jr. had with, you know, this meeting that he had and the intent to get dirt on Hillary Clinton, and the fact that now, you know, some of the conservatives are trying to smear the Clinton campaign by saying she was doing a similar thing with Ukraine? What about all of that? What do you think that listeners should just take away from all of this? Is this just more Russia, Russia, Russia bashing, or is there something more serious about this?
Yeah, I think what's important to keep in mind is that what we have here is a unquestionably illegal solicitation of a foreign national. And the most troubling aspect of it is that it wasn't just any foreign national. It was a foreign national who was acting on behalf of a hostile foreign government. There are other questions that people have been raised about how this might apply in different circumstances, maybe less nefarious circumstances, and I think some of those are interesting questions. But they have nothing to do with what actually happened here, which is a solicitation to a hostile foreign government, and that's completely prohibited under federal law, and I have not seen a convincing argument to the contrary, you know, at any point.
Well, you keep saying a hostile foreign government. So let's say it was France or it was England. Would that still be considered a similar crime?
Yeah, the identity of the foreign national doesn't matter, or the identity of the foreign country doesn't matter, but it does matter that it was a foreign government. And, you know, for example, if there were ever a criminal prosecution on these facts, there is a particular sentencing enhancement, which means people can get a harsher prison sentence if they engage in this activity with a foreign government versus some other foreign national. That's a very, very significant violation of federal law. Mm-hmm. And it's important that not get lost in the shuffle. The fact that it happens to be Russia, I think, highlights why it is worthy of investigation and, if appropriate, prosecution. But it doesn't change the illegal nature of the conduct.
Mm-hmm. So finally, what do you want people to know? Because, I mean, it's just, you know, there's like you listen to MSNBC and it's like Russia, Russia, Russia bashing every day. And it's as if this is just another part of it. But in fact, it's different because there is a clear violation of the law.
Right, and this law is an extremely important one. This is the law that says that we, American citizens, get to run our own elections, and that people who are foreign nationals have no role to play in that process. This is the way that we ensure that American citizens govern themselves, and when people at the highest levels of the most important campaign in the country violate that law, it should get everybody's attention.
Adav Noti is Senior Director at the Campaign Legal Center and former Associate Counsel of the FEC, the Federal Election Commission. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York.
No wall! The Trump machine has got to fall!
Time after time, activists have gathered in front of Trump Tower to show their opposition to Donald Trump and his administration. This weekend was no different. Here in New York City, a demonstration aligned with 18 protests throughout the U.S. took place. Stephanie Attad is a graduate economics student originally from Lebanon.
I am appalled at what I've seen this regime doing. It's in a deliberate attack against people of color, against women, against the right to free speech, against our environment, and it threatens the very future of this planet. And if people don't stand up, this regime is only going to continue to oppress people, and all that it takes is inaction for this regime to become full-out fascist and for violence against women and people of color and other oppressed people, the working class in general, to continue.
In the 1970s, Nixon and Agnew were driven from office. And just in this past winter, the people in Seoul, Korea, protested day after day, night after night, until their president was driven for office. That's what we want to see happen in this country by the fall.
Andy Z is with Refuse Fascism.
The message to the listeners of BAI, this is an audience of people who are concerned about social justice, who are concerned about the ability of the people to lift their heads up and be free. And I think your listeners are quite aware that this Trump regime is a serious matter. This is not just another bad Republican administration. And look, I'll also say to BAI listeners that the point is not were things good under the Democrats. That's not the point at all. Of course, this is a system that we live under that oppresses people all the time. It's a system based on exploitation. But Refuse Fascism is trying to unite everyone who would oppose this regime, because fascism is a qualitative change in the form of rule that is exerted over the masses of people. And that could really hamper all the social justice struggles. So we need now to unite in many different ways, but to drive this regime from power and to recognize this is not just about what happens to American lives. This is what's about in the interests of humanity. Already, civilian casualties in the Mideast have tripled under Donald Trump. Already, he's dropped the mother of all bombs, the largest non-nuclear weapon, and he's threatened nuclear war in the Korean and South China Sea. This is serious business, and people got to get off being complacent about this regime. We need to drive it out, and then we can go on from there. So that's for the BAI listeners. Come out, get involved, and keep doing what you're doing, but you need to also change what you're doing to get involved in a movement that's going to put a stop to this. I'll tell you this. Anybody who studied fascism in Nazi Germany, in Italy, in Turkey, currently going on, or in Chile, any place you know, it can become too late to stop fascism from within a country. And that's what this is about. And if anybody wants to come up and debate that question, I'm happy to debate them on the air, off the air, that this is actually a qualitative change, and we must meet it, we must challenge it, we must unite, we must get to the point where this fall there's millions of people occupying public space in every city of this country until the powers that be are forced to respond to the demand of the people that these people must go. We don't want a Christian fascist state under Mike Pence. We don't want a fascist state under Donald Trump. We don't want fascism at all. So we need to stop it. Nobody else is going to do this but the people.
You can find out more by going to refusefascism.org. And finally, environmental groups are holding a workshop and rally this evening in Saratoga Springs. It's to insist that the EPA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, extend General Electric's cleanup of toxic PCBs in the Hudson. Andrea Sears reports.
The cleanup isn't over until human health is protected. That's the message environmental groups want the EPA to hear about General Electric's remediation of the Hudson River. The groups hold a public workshop and rally this evening in Saratoga Springs, where the EPA is holding what it calls a public information meeting. The agency wants to declare that GE's cleanup of toxic PCBs it dumped into the river more than 30 years ago has been a success. But according to Haley Carlock with the group Scenic Hudson, the extent of damage to the river was far worse than the assessment on which the cleanup agreement was based.
The goals of the project are not going to be reached anytime near the time frames that EPA had set forth, which, when push comes to shove, means that more needs to be done.
The EPA recently released a draft of its second five-year review on the Hudson River Superfund cleanup. It is accepting public comments on the review through September 1st. The EPA is aware that ending the cleanup now would leave 2 to 4 times more PCBs in the river than expected, but Carlock says the agency believes that over several decades, the river itself will take care of the rest.
EPA says that eventually it will be protective of human health and the environment, which essentially would let GE off the hook for doing any further cleanup in the Hudson River.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and New York's Department of Environmental Conservation have called for more remediation. Carlock points out that if the river is still polluted, the fact that GE has completed the dredging ordered by the original consent decree doesn't mean the job is finished.
There are reopeners within the consent decree that allow EPA to try to compel GE to conduct additional cleanup until such a time as the remedy is protected.
The EPA is required to continue reviewing PCB levels in the Hudson until it determines that human health is protected. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, July 19th, 2017. The news was produced with Akeem Killick, Andrea Sears, and Reggie Johnson. I'm Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.